desires. And so it seemed only natural to get all of us together and say, all right, what really are we talking about? What is it that we already know as a group, and proceed from there. So as far as the theme again for this group, we figured we'd get the conversation started and set it up to last. Now, one other thing that I thought just to sort of give us some hope in terms of teaching science classically and from a Christian perspective was that as I've gone back and looked at some of the scientists, and I'm sure Helen will touch on this in a little bit, but they had a classical understanding in a lot of ways. And many of them did understand science from a Christian perspective and discover it from a Christian perspective. So in that sense, we're really recovering not only the lost tools, but the ruins. We're repairing the ruins that have gone before. And so it really is a recovery, a rebuilding effort that we're involved in. Now, in terms of moving on here to the discussion side of it, I'm sure all of us, we have a general sense of where science education is, and we may even have a sense of where it could go and how it could be improved. But we all have questions. And so in order to answer those questions, ACPS has been gracious to us by allowing us to establish a discussion group on their website. Now, if you look on your little agenda that we have passed out, you don't have it with some on a chair, just right out behind the them in your person. On that, it tells you how to join that discussion. And I think that will really be the method that we can use to continue the discussion. Is there anyone that doesn't have, will have two papers? And to join is extremely simple. All you need to do is send an email to Tom Spencer, his email address is on his paper there, and ask to join. And he'll put you on the discussion board. What that basically is a spot where you can ask questions, and then everyone sees the questions you've asked, and then everyone can chime in with answers. So, moving on, the next thing that we'll do here, as a way to stimulate that discussion on the internet, is to fill out the science survey. All of you should have a survey. If anyone does not have a survey, it's a full screen picture. One, two, three. Do you have anyone? Could you raise your hand if you need one? I'll need to make some more copies.
Sorry, I can go get a copy.
Okay. So raise your hand if you don't have it. One, two, three.
Okay. I'll pray about it, guys. Thank you.
Yeah. So again, this survey, if you could fill out, there's a bin just out on the registration table where you pick up your stuff at the conference that says science education survey here. So if you could fill that out, return to that bin by the end of the conference, Saturday of the day. My wife and I will compile all those results and then we'll put that on the discussion board for everyone to join to be able to see. Yes, Ellen.
May we add comments to things that are not on this list?
You may add whatever you like on there. This is an open invitation.
May I say something now?
Sure.
I thought a lot about this as a believer and as a public school science teacher. And I studied philosophy of science at the undergraduate and graduate level. And I think the major problem in public schools and private schools as well is that most teachers, elementary, high school, don't understand the nature of science. And if we ourselves can internalize and understand really what science is, then we can teach it to our students and behave as scientists before our students and mentor them through the process. But we have to understand it ourselves. And I don't see anything in here about the philosophy of science. And the history of science is related to that because as you understand the philosophy of science and the history of science and the two kind of go hand in hand, but I just guess I want to put in a real plug here somewhere for the philosophy of science to be dealt with at the elementary level and the high school level for the teachers.
And that's great as far as establishing the foundation. You need to figure out, okay, what really needs to be there to have a foundation. So that's a great recommendation. If you want, you can just add little dots. You can do it on the bottom. You can do it on the back as well. We'll look at the back to see what insights you have.
I didn't hear what you said again.
The Soul of Science by Nancy Piercy and Tony Yates. I'm reading I didn't have much background in history and science, and that's what I'm reading.
I'm not familiar with that, but that's great. I mean, I didn't agree, but understanding that science is not history. I think in high schools, I had administrators that I was trying to explain and teach what science was, and yet my students understood it better than my principal. Science is a process. It's a theory. It's a developing of a theory and developing of an understanding. And unless students are doing that in your classroom, they will never understand science. You can't learn science from a textbook. Yeah.
In some ways, being a logic teacher, logic being key, that if you don't understand the grammar of logic, you don't get it if they're at the regular state here, it's hard to teach. Teaching seniors physics, I'm finding that's another problem. They don't have the grammar. They aren't taught the grammar of science. What it means to go through the process of observation and formulating a theory and experimenting and verifying and understanding that process. They don't. So by the time they're seniors, I'm going back and we're having to do that incorporated at the rhetoric level, which is not the right place to do it.
And that's where I think that was my push for elementary teachers to really understand what science is and to do some science. And it doesn't have to be that hard. It can be rather simple experiments. But if teachers don't work through things in a scientific manner, there's no way they're going to be able to mentor students through the process.
One of the things we haven't done very well is fun and math level in classical Christian schools, think about it holistically. Most of us are probably rhetoric and dialectic teachers. And what happens is we haven't invested ourselves in our grammar teachers in helping them develop the grammar that we need to build on. I've worked with that in the math program, and we need to do that in the science area as well. Because I think what you said is exactly right. There are certain building blocks of grammar understanding in math and science that we need to build upon, but we can only do that if we people who know science better. Most of the grammar students, teachers at our school, are not science and math oriented. Maybe some of you that think it's different, but at our school that's not generally the case. And they need those of us that are math and science savvy to help them build that foundational course.
I think that's a great point. And there's going to be one of the things about this topic is that it's huge. And we can go down and look at, okay, what is the grammar student need? And we could spend the rest of the day talking about that. And so in light of how big this topic is, I thought, why don't we take advice from Phil from your talk this morning and break your findings of lessons, but I think we can talk to the discussion as well. Let's break down our problem. Let's look at, okay, really, what is there? What are the components? What are the key questions that we have to answer in our methods, in our instruction, whatever it may be? What are the key questions? And that'll prove to be the second way that we can kind of promote our discussion online, is this will be sort of a brainstorming session to figure out, okay, what are the key questions? And we'll be able to answer those, but most of the answers for our questions now, in fact, will have to come later, either later in this hour if we run people to identify all the questions, or over lunches and dinner and the internet for the rest of the conference. So if we can take some time now to go through and just identify what are some of the key questions. Now the key questions may be key for you, hey, this is what we've been dealing with at our school. So at our school, this is a big question that's come up, or in my own personal study, this is what's come up. But we'll go through, we'll make a list of, and we've got a whiteboard here that will apply that as well. We'll go through and make a list of all of the questions that we have. And it may be helpful along that line to go through and explain, this is a little bit where this question came from, just so we have a little bit better sense of what the question is. So before we throw it out there and we get some questions from you all, and there aren't been some that can be reiterated back up here, I put a couple quotes at the bottom of your agenda there, three that are personal favorites of mine that come up in our science classes at the Oaks. And I'm not going to actually read those now. They're just for you to enjoy as I enjoy them. The bottom one, though, I'll make this quick mention. This bottom one came from a book that's a companion book to the Great Books. And it basically goes through and it gives the foundation for math and science dealing with what Helen talked about, the philosophy and a little bit of history as well. But there was a quote in there about what liberal learning in the sciences would be.
And it talks about how it doesn't have to do with facts or theories necessarily. Those are means to an end, and the end is being able to think a scientific idea down to its roots. Roots in history, roots in philosophy, but its roots. And that being given to the ability to have a free mind, as was mentioned in those processes. So, with that, I'll go ahead and just field questions. We'll write them on the whiteboard, hopefully fill that thing up. And we'll try and wrap up about 1:15, and then we can just stay in this room. So we'll try and wrap up 4 minutes where there can be individual conversations. And hopefully continue for a long time. Are there any questions?
Just
foundation
defined
to
that. That's not the author, that's just the quote for the preface to it?
Yep, it was a preface to that book.
Do you know the author?
It was Ernest Wilson.
I mean, of the book.
Of the book. The book was put together, I think it was by Mortimer Adler. He and there was another editor, and I don't remember who that was. I have the book here. I'm guessing outside of
it. It's a topic a couple of people already got so far in the conversation. People share this feeling that there's a two-headed issue with science and math. Classical schools. One is how to teach science and math classes. The other is not just that you have science and math teachers who understand logic and rhetoric, but you have rhetoric teachers who understand the importance of observation and empirical data and putting together an argument. And I view that as big as an issue, maybe bigger. I've done some research on senior teaching and finding that we're teaching our students in some ways to think like Greeks and rather level we do. Of course, Aristotle, so to speak, and his way of thinking, well, Aristotle got it all wrong at the same time because he believed in pure reasoning without observation. It wasn't until the 1600s that they got turned around. Well, we teach in some cases our students to the rhetoric stage, everything's about reasoning. And where's the role of science and math in terms of observation and measurement and calculation comes into putting together a rhetorical argument. So, with that being said, I would like to see some people on the rhetoric side signing up for this forum and paying attention and to what's going on in the discussion as well as just a bunch of science people to keep the head masters in the, and the heads of the rhetoric.
Yeah, I think we can look at this as a flywheel. This is sort of the first initial urge to get it rolling, and then I think we'll get some momentum and get everyone else on board as well. Is there a question that I can put up here?
I don't know. I'm just looking at the combination of the scope of what we're looking at is two-sided, not just how we teach science. It's also in a classical environment.
I think the issue that the root of that, the issue that we have to deal with as products of our own time and culture, is that there's a dichotomy right now of the humanities and the sciences, and they glare at each other across the halls of universities. And probably most of us have been raised as one or the other. Our education for your humanities education for sciences, and we have to overcome that. I think maybe that's the question: is how do we overcome the humanities versus science and science divide, not only as a staff, but as students and our curriculum. And I think classrooms as a whole is focused on humanities and develop that very well.
And you know, I think, Dory, you're right, but I think my experience is that science and math people are more willing to go toward the humanities, but the humanities people are less willing to go toward the science and math people. Because it's been frightened off at some point. Exactly. And what happened? You're absolutely right.
So kind of the relation, what is the relationship between the humanities and...
No. It's more than that.
Okay.
It's how do you entice humanities people to understand science and work with science and math people.
Okay.
Do you think that's going to take leadership? The principal of the school having a vision, or is it going to be
does that come naturally for us? Because I'm very willing to work towards a goal and to, you know, be challenged. It's not that I don't want to be challenged, but you've got to challenge the students in the right way. Because if you come across as mean and demanding and unforgiving, they're scared to death. And that's kind of, I think, in my experience, that's been some of what has been my experience.
It involves breaking down walls in our schools, because I have a lot of discussions about this with our other teacher and what we're doing with our junior and senior thesis, and just being willing to recognize when a question or a problem or demand some kind of empirical aspect of the argument, and saying, all right, go talk to your physics teacher or your statistics teacher and find out what you need to do. And that doesn't mean that the rhetoric teacher has to become an expert in all areas, but we have to become conscious of it and be willing to work together across this boundary ourselves.
And I think that's something that we can kind of start doing here. We're trying to get these conversations going. Other questions? Yes.
Yeah, as a homeschool parent, I think that all of you who are in administration of a school, the reason that a lot of us homeschool classically on our own is because there is no school available in a lot of our communities where there's truly an integration of the humanities and science. And when you spend your life studying classical education, we homeschooled for 10 years at our house, and still don't have a school in our town that truly has an integrated approach to teaching all of the subjects, how all the subjects relate to one another, how they all reveal the glory of God, how God is revealed through all of those subjects. That's just not happening in classical education, and that's why a lot of us homeschool, because we're the one teacher trying to teach all those subjects so that we can incorporate them and integrate them together. And so how do we do that in a school?
Well, this morning, I can't remember what I heard, but the idea of the students mimicking the teacher. And that's what I see happening in our school, is if all of us teachers are disjointed, I see the students not willing to carry a subject from one class. Well, I can't write a paper for you, you're a science teacher, not an English teacher. So we're not saying that, and then, you know, the students are involved in part of the family.
Yeah, so what are some of the other questions? We want to make sure we get the questions up here, too. We can answer them in a group, but let's get some questions for us. Yes.
One question that I would have is that if we're talking about integrating science into the board and teaching science classes, could part of that mean getting away from the model of teaching science as simply a building on the last and latest scientific theory, and an examination of, I've addressed somewhat more of the history of science, how even currently discarded theories which we don't believe are the case anymore, how those were developed, and perhaps using that as an avenue for introducing students to science in a more kind of immediate and observational sense, as it's also being addressed, that students need to not only learn what scientific theory says, but practice it, even in cases where they're developing bad scientific theories, that the practice of that could be a way to broaden scientific teaching. Don't go higher than that, say,
so the question would be sort of, how do you teach science in historical context? Where are you going with that?
I brought up Aristotle. That's something I'm starting to incorporate now. Aristotle's physics and natural philosophy components of that. How does someone use reason to come up with such a flawed model of science? When he's holding up with Sebastian of reason, why? Well, because he's unwilling to trust in observation and have no experimentation, because that was not the way we're taught. And so that study helps you understand that what was missing from that process. So when you jump to, unfortunately, what happened is still when you jump 2,000 years into the 1600s, when someone finally said, oh, that apple just fell down from the tree. Maybe I ought to measure something and just experiment. But one way I think I'm looking at it now is this maybe along the lines of incorporating more primary sources. Get out of the textbooks, more primary sources, more reading, outworking things discovered in their context at the time.
The real question is what's the role of the curriculum?
The role of primary sources.
We can use primary sources, we can use math textbooks, we can experiment all day. What's our curriculum?
We'll have a question up here. What textbooks do you use? We'll have another question.
I didn't say textbooks. I say curriculum.
Sure. But that's part of it. So we'll have what textbooks, what primary sources.
Or should textbooks be used at all?
Well, there's another question. So let's say, what is the role of textbooks? And if you have, I forgot your name.
Andrew.
Andrew, if you have a question that I can write up here, sort of a summary, we'll get that up here too.
Yeah, I got a question. What's the relative role of textbooks, primary source, reading the primary source, and on
I would even add technology to that list. They started with Aristotle's experiment and made you think it worked, and then they showed you how it didn't work, and that was in a public school. And I think that's the kind of science we should be using.
Right, but Helen, we're also talking about just we have, in the reality we have, we're not homeschooling, so we have September to May. And so where, I mean, part of what we were discussing this morning was I don't want to think, as I taught in the public school, if I'm preparing for AP Civics, there are 15 units that I have to get through. They're going to have a chance, they're going to have to be there, they're going to have to be there, they're going to have to. I've got to get through that all. I think the teacher can get through that all. But are they learning? Are they understanding? Are they going to be able to walk away and be able to make decisions based on reason and fact and looking at the data that is around them, interpreting that? If it's worn by a car, that's a finished problem to me. Exactly what you said. What do you know? What do you want to know? And how are you going to get this? So, you know, kids say, well, what does this have to do with the real world? You're never going to buy a car? Like, we're trying to teach you how to think. We're trying to teach you how to solve problems. But there has to be some grammar, there has to be context, there has to be the process, the experimentation, and there has to be this larger historical context, not to mention the theological context of. Yeah, I'm a little overwhelmed right now. How do I come again from the public school realm where math and science are completely devoid of God? So how where do I go now as a teacher to search out and learn these things? Because, wow, Newton was a believer. Who knew? Nobody ever thought that. science is the revelation of God's creation and mathematics is how we communicate. And get that picture.
And I think on the survey, as many resources as you can put down that would answer that type of question, the better. And we'll just combine all of those resources so that you'll be able to get those. And they'll all be written out.
If I could just, two things that you said that are important. How do we as faculties and administrators think thematically over entire curriculum, so math and science is over here and the humanities are over here. And also, I think another thing you said is, how do we create intuitive science students? How do they have an intuitive understanding of that grammar that we're teaching them? And that's hard. That's real hard.
If I could just build on that, we're trying to solve the problem before we define the problem.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I'm asking you to do is a much more basic question. And the question is this. What is the purpose we're trying to accomplish in science education? What is the purpose we're trying to accomplish in science education? Because are we, to build up this morning we can talk, are we teaching people to teach science, they teach people to teach science? No. Are we teaching for, so they can go to science in college? Are we teaching scientific literacy? Are we teaching them the tools of learning science? Are we teaching them the nature of science? There's a lot of potential answers to this question, but the question is, what is our purpose that we're trying to accomplish in teaching?
I think the goal is to teach everyone how to behave as a scientist, from the garage mechanic to the chef to the college professor in literature. They all need to know how to behave as a scientist.
Does that come from somewhere? Is that a
It comes from mentoring students through the process.
But is that a premise, or does that follow from what we're trying to accomplish?
No, that's the goal. I think that's the goal.
I mean, it's a premise. We have two sources of revelation from God about the nature of God. One of them is the scripture itself, and the other is the scripture comes from God says he's revealed himself to the world around us. So if we want to reason in our search for truth, if we want to reason and to discover what is true, an observation of the world around us is one way of discovering that truth.
Let me propose, however, that quantitative inductive logic is not even true.
And without a premise.
Now, before we go too far down,
that's the nature of science.
Well, I think what we can do is take your questions.
The question is what if we do?
Right.
What problem are we trying to solve?
We want to take that question and break it into sub-questions, because I think there's a lot there. So we can find out, what was that last question you had? What is the goal of science?
And then the other question is, what's the nature of science? Is it an epistemological? I don't believe it is.
You're forgetting that science has presuppositions. Every scientist has presuppositions.
But I think these are questions we need to ask. We're not getting the answers. These are the questions we need to ask.
Okay, so my question is, what are the presuppositions of every scientist?
Okay.
And I've got three of them. What we see is real, what we see is organized, and we're smart enough to figure out at least some of the order. And if we realize that God has created the order, I mean, I did it in public school, but you can do it in a Christian school so much more easily. Because you know who created the order. What we see is real, what we see is organized, and we're capable, at least to some degree, of figuring out the order of nature. Those are our presuppositions. From there, we teach students how to be scientists. And everybody, I contend every single human being, needs to learn how to become a scientist, even if they're a housemaker making a batch of biscuits. Or a garage mechanic, or just a hobbyist working in the garage, or whatever you're doing, you need to understand how to solve problems scientifically. You don't need the 5 steps of the scientific method or whatever. That I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about doing science.
Well, because there are forms of reasoning that we use from a set of means scientific is a form of logic that is reasoning from. Observe premises versus reading from some sort of revelation of scripture. But it is a form of logic. How do we take an observation and reason from that observation to come up with some answer that is true?
I mean, it happens in geometry. you start out with some presuppositions, axioms, postulates, and then you develop some theorems, and then you develop other theorems, and you prove things, and that's what you do in science.
So let's finish getting some questions. We've got about 15 minutes left to generate some questions, and we'll continue the discussion. I'm a professional mathematician, and what I would say, something that I have thought for a long time that surprises a lot of people that I tell it to, but it may not be much of a surprise here, but if I were to answer the question, what is the single most important quality about a person who makes them a good mathematician, I would say, without a doubt, imagination. Because logic is not going to, you want to prove theorem, A implies B. Logic is not going to tell you what A is, it's not going to tell you what B is, it's not going to tell you how to get from A to B. All it will do is tell you, given a particular way to get from A to B, is it valid or not. So it's home with all of that content there requires imagination. So my question is, how do we train the imagination of the students to be good at math and science?
What did you say?
You read lots of
different stories. You do science and you don't have the answer.
Good, any others? Yes.
I know it's been probably some of that, but it is kind of my passion. It is how to teach and train about the ethical implications of science and science research, because our children are going to have to deal with reproductive cloning, with artificial intelligence. That is their world. That's what it's going to be. And our society says technology is good. What's wrong with being cybernetic? What's wrong with, you know, replacing your eye with a computerized eye that can see better than you? Why? Why would it be wrong? Would it be wrong? You know. And as much as teaching them the logic and reasoning of how to go about scientifically is where does this all stand in relation to how we are to live as Christians in society that is slowly going over the edge?
That goes back to that. Ken, when our students take on teaching material and answering those questions, how many of them will take and grab a scientific question like that and address for the evolution?
And just everything I'm dealing with today is a beauty from about 1920 through 1945. Every single issue we're dealing with has been more looking for. It's not new. Questions are already being made.
Are there any other questions? And we can even go back to one. And things that you're wondering about in your classroom, whatever, this is why
I would say, as someone who just graduated from a secular university, how do you prepare students, use math and science as a tool to prepare students for the challenges that they're going to face from the secular world in that field, even just in core classes, for those that do go on to secular college studies?
Maybe how do we think about the test?
Well, we want them to have the background. We want them to then also have the 2+2=4. But then how do we, I guess my problem is that so much. What, how do you take a two or how do you get it all done? Mm-hmm. And if that can bring it in your humanity, then to be a third teacher, then you are preparing them. Here's a topic that would help me in my physics class. Here's something, you know, how does it help in biology?
Another question that we're toying with in our school is, think of the traditional high school model of teaching biology, chemistry, physics, or do we really want a more integrated approach so that we can trace ideas that they develop together, components that they develop together, rather than, you know, is that division of science in this particular field really making more sense? Or is there another organization of the curriculum that can do that?
So is the science curriculum to be divided up differently? Or historically?
Is that what differently, I guess.
You speak of cross with management of science within the science curriculum.
No, I just meant within the science curriculum, although that's a valid point too. I think you tend to teach biology, ninth grade, chemistry, tenth grade, that sort of pattern, and is that really makes the most sense, or could we integrate those a little more?
So that you're teaching the grammar across the country in the dialect.
Or tracing ideas that they developed historically, or I'm up. I don't know. I don't have an answer to the question. I'm asking because I don't.
I do because I'm a victim.
Yeah, so one of the things that I've always kind of struggled with was the time element of how much content or how much specific grammar of the different topics that you have to cover should be sacrificed to provide opportunities for observation and intuition. How much do you feed the kids with what Milliken did or whatever, and how much do you allow them to find out for themselves what someone else found? You just kind of set them up to succeed. That's extremely time intensive, along with the fact that you have other responsibilities and limitations and budget and all that. And what is the balance? And how much if you are to do investigations, how much of that investigation should be qualitative? Just seeing something happen to kind of give them a spark of kind of giving them an emphasis towards a new topic, and how much should be actually teaching them the quantitative scientific, you know, thinking through something. That's always the struggle I have in terms of it's what you were saying. The amount of time required to do all of the training takes away from the education. But the training really has to be there if you're going to call yourself, that's what you were saying, about exams and future classes and what the parents expect, because the parents were trained as well. So all of these things have to put together in 50 minutes.
So you're kind of asking what would the scope of each science class be in terms of
to what degree is content sacrifice for observation and investigation?
Thank you. hope for a special, what's going on now in time? Yes, exactly.
Good question.
I think we have time to do this, but school will be good in the end.
That's why the humanities people don't want to come near us.
Time. You know, there's a lot that we can do, and it's great.
I certainly have more questions than I have answers. but the classical model works. What if we taught the facts during the grammar year? What if we taught our young people to think during the logic years and took that grammar and begin to apply and chew on it and think about it? Our children would then be ready for the rhetoric stage, and you would have to be using math and literature to do the great writing you would even be doing in science.
I don't think you can leave it that long.
Oh, I'm not saying you leave it that long. I gave you a very short answer. I didn't want to talk for 5 minutes.
Your question is kind of what is the grammar?
Yeah, okay. Let's go back and talk about the classical
model. There's rhetoric in the grammar. And I agree with you. That's the beauty of the model.
That's what we need to do. Let's not forget who we are.
But you know, classical schools aren't teaching classically. No. That's what we're trying to tell you, is that as parents, customers who want to go to your school, they're not doing it.
Well, I think that's the beauty of this time, is that we can figure out, okay, what are we not doing, where are we not to go, and who can we partner with to get there? It's not something that we have to know by default. It's something that we get to work on when it's built in 10 years. We've got 10 years to figure out that.
But kind of going about Liz's point is, it seems to me like Sayer thought of it somewhat herself already in suggesting that teachers be mobile. And I don't know, I'm not a teacher, but doesn't necessarily seem to me like rhetoric teachers are actually teaching grammar here, which is what they were meant. Especially that, well, a lot of teachers definitely teach outside, otherwise they're going to harden it to a term of adolescence. I think that, especially the endpoint, the grammar and rhetoric, if the grammar teachers don't know what the endpoint is, how can they aim for it? And how can rhetoric teachers know how to utilize the stuff given them until they've given it to them?
We're going to wrap up here in just a second. If there's any quick questions that I can write up here, we'll do that, and then we'll go ahead and wrap up. We can continue the conversation.
Somebody brought up a point. I think it's just with the role of the organization in this effect, this cross-pollination, this is a personal opinion, won't happen without department chairs. And most classical schools do budgetary constraints. I teach 6 classes a day, plus Coach Pratt, and have 1 prep period. In my spare time, I'm doing this. So the question is kind of an administrative. Is there a vision of the school to administratively enable all the stuff we're trying to talk about here, but developing and making it work by carving out resources? One teacher has a lighter class loaded to be as well.
My head is revised over and have a session, I think it's tomorrow, on the relationship between the headmaster and the faculty. And he won't say this, but he is amazing at helping his faculty communicate and work together. And so I would highly recommend that session on that issue, on vertical alignment and communication between rhetoric and logic and grammar, and be forcing us and willingly we work together.
What are the leading questions, the leading ideas, I guess, say, of science that need to be included in the scholarly and rhetoric education? Where we want to identify the grammar, but we also need to identify the ideas.
Well, we'll go ahead and wrap up there. I want to thank you guys all for coming and being a part of this, and I hope that we can make this sort of an annual thing. We'll have some answers to this with the discussion board, so go ahead and give that a try. If you're not able to get on the next couple of days, although you don't have internet, so there are rooms to pay for it. But if you have trouble getting on, you can just probably just keep trying to talk. That's the only email I have right now. Right, Tom? And also, 3:00, Helen is going to be giving a talk on Sir Isaac Newton and classical education.
And what teachers today can learn from it.
And what teachers today can learn from it. So, hope to see you there. Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah, if we could go ahead and put the chairs back in the row again.
Oh, sorry, did I knock you? I'm sorry.